Welcome. You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for the Arapaho County News, read by Tim Elliott. This is being recorded on June 8, 2024. Today we will be reading the following main articles. Aurora Fire Rescue Steps Up Medic Training with Repurposed Ambulance by Max Levy, Sentinel, Colorado Staff Writer. Lowry Ranch Oil Project Opponents Demand New Environmental Hearings from Arapaho County by Kristen O., Sentinel, Colorado. In-Home Euthanasia Offers Pet Owners Alternative Way to Say Goodbye by Jane Rutter. Bonding Authority Set to Buy Fable Stanley Hotel by Jason Blevins. Arapaho County Continues to Sound Budget Cuts Alarm by Isabel Guzman. 8 Things to Know Before Whitewater Rafting This Summer by John Renfro. And following up with miscellaneous articles. Aurora Fire Rescue Steps Up Medic Training with Repurposed Ambulance. Traveling at speed and hemmed in by an arsenal of equipment, the back of an ambulance is hardly the ideal place to provide life-saving medical care. However, it's the environment paramedics find themselves in every day, as they rush injured and dying patients through traffic to hospitals and make the most of their limited space and gear. Aurora firefighters, too, may find themselves in the back of an ambulance as they hand patients off to Falk Rocky Mountain crews, a circumstance that Aurora Fire Rescue hopes to better prepare its members for with the help of a new, fully equipped training ambulance. Most of the time we get there without an ambulance yet, and so we're trying to train all of the way through, showing up on scene with our kits, starting the call, having the ambulance show up, and then getting in the back of the ambulance and working in the back, Aurora Fire Rescue medic and field instructor Amber Dawson said. It's very, very hard to mimic a real call and the adrenaline of that happening, she said. This helps us do that. It helps pull all of the pieces together. With the help of an ambulance donated by Falk and close to $90,000 in other donated and purchased equipment, Aurora Fire Rescue is trying to replicate the real-world conditions of pre-hospital care in a mobile training lab that the agency plans to rotate among its 17 fire stations to keep firefighters' skills sharp. The vast majority of calls handled by Aurora Fire Rescue involve a person or people requiring medical care, the agency's medical director, Eric Hill, said. All Aurora firefighters are expected to have or earn their certification as an emergency medical technician, and until recently, all were expected to go through the more demanding paramedic certification process. The training lab's interior has been set up to mimic the inside of a working Falk ambulance. Other equipment used in conjunction with the lab includes an anatomically accurate dummy that medics fitted with an oxygen mask, intraosseous medication drip, and heart monitor during a simulated response to a heart attack May 31st. Instructors controlled the heart monitor to simulate different stages of cardiac emergency and provided other feedback through monitoring equipment in the lab that medics were expected to respond to once the dummy was loaded into the ambulance. The idea is to bring the most realistic training environment we can so they can practice this, Hill said. And Aurora is pretty spread out. Because this thing is mobile, we can literally go to different stations and move around. Investing in the oversight and training of paramedics has been one of the priorities of Chief Alec Oten since he joined Aurora Fire Rescue last year. Oten compared the certification process for paramedics to, quote, drinking from a fire hose, end quote, and said continuing education is particularly important for providers working in a field as intricate as pre-hospital care. A typical part-time paramedic program is maybe 2 years, Oten said. There's a ton of complexities. You're asking people to walk into any number of different scenarios where they might have 10% of the information. During his tenure, the chief has also reestablished the agency's medical branch to improve oversight of paramedics and rolled out numerous policy changes to comply with and build on the requirements of the consent decree reform agreement that also involves the Aurora Police Department. Related to the consent decree, the rollout of the lab comes as the agency grapples with the convictions of Jeremy Cooper and Peter Sosinskiak for their roles in the 2019 death of Elijah McClain. Since the convictions, about 11.7% firefighters certified to work as paramedics have told Aurora Fire Rescue they are no longer willing to provide the more advanced level of care associated with the certification, Commander Brandon Sauter wrote in an email. Instruction through the mobile lab will be provided by medics such as Dawson, as well as dedicated medical staffers employed by the agency to firefighters at a variety of education levels. I think this is just an example of how special and creative and caring our folks are, Oten said. I think it's really going to bear fruit. Lowry Ranch Oil Project opponents demand new environmental hearings from Arapahoe County. Environmental activists continue to advocate for the Aurora Reservoir as the possibility of a multiple-location fracking project in the region looms. The grassroots organization Save the Aurora Reservoir, also known as STAR, presented a petition with, quote, hundreds, end quote, of signatures on Wednesday, asking for public hearings before the Arapahoe County Commissioners. STAR, as well as representatives from other advocacy groups, stood in front of the commissioner's office in Littleton on Wednesday while demanding action from their elected leaders. They have for months been protesting against the proposed Lowry Ranch oil drilling project, which has been in the works for years. There has been extraordinary public interest in and opposition to these well sites, Marcia Goldsmith Kamen, president of STAR, said in their online press statement. It is essential for the Board of County Commissioners to hold full public hearings on these applications to ensure the opportunity for satisfactory stakeholder input and public participation during the review process. Also on Wednesday, people spoke about the negative health and environment effects that come from fracking. We are here today to demand accountability. We demand transparency into the permit process and to the oil and gas rulemaking process that the county commissioners promised last year, Advocate Bobby Mooney said, according to a press statement. We demand a response from Arapahoe County to our petition delivered today, and we demand action to protect public health, safety, welfare, and the environment as the law requires. Arapahoe County officials were not immediately available for comment. Civitas Resources, a Denver-based energy company, submitted a proposal for this project in 2022. According to the State Energy and Carbon Management Commission, this development would involve 166 new wells across hundreds of acres in the region, some on public lands. The new oil and gas locations would be located east of Moynihan Road. In a recent local hearing among state oil and gas officials, Civitas officials said the project has been amended to accommodate concerns about fracking beneath the Lowry landfill. An EPA Superfund site relatively near the Aurora Reservoir, Civitas officials said the project would be subject to and would meet state environmental guidelines. Still, the fracking project has faced resistance from a wide range of area residents and environmentalists, citing its proximity to the Aurora Reservoir and plans to drill far beneath it. Arapahoe County Commissioners last year narrowly turned down a county hiatus on granting oil and gas applications while the county reviewed its permitting process. Members of STAR say they are unconvinced the amended plan still doesn't pose undue risk to local drinking water, air, and other parts of the community. Hundreds turned out and spoke against the drilling project during an hours-long public meeting hosted by the Colorado Energy and Carbon Management Commission in May. Another public meeting will be held on June 26th. Additional information about the proposed project can be found on the Arapaho County website. Police calls result in booze ban and early weekend closing of Aurora Reservoir, by Kristen Noe. City officials are temporarily banning alcoholic beverages and limiting weekend evening hours at the Aurora Reservoir beginning this weekend, in response to increased police calls to the popular venue in southeast Aurora. Several isolated incidents, and not one single incident, led to staff raising concern to city management in order to mitigate any future incidents, Aurora spokesperson Ryan Luby said in a statement. Police officials said the calls focus mainly on intoxication and behavior. The changes are intended to, quote, improve the guest experience and safety, end quote, according to a statement from the city of Aurora. Officials said that the bulk of the issues occur on weekends, and especially on Fridays, so the reservoir will close early on those 2 days at 6 p.m. The reservoir is generally open from 5:30 a.m. through about 9 p.m. Neither possession nor consumption of alcoholic beverages will be permitted at any time. Park rules prohibiting loud music will also be strictly enforced, officials said. Also, visitors can expect, quote, heightened security, end quote, but officials did not detail what that entails. The changes will not have an impact on pre-scheduled, permitted, large-scale events or any other parks, recreation, and open space facilities or parks, city officials said in a statement. Aurora Reservoir is a beautiful and unique space within the city, and one that we want all guests to be able to enjoy, Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Director Brooke Bell said in the press statement. We are making these changes to improve the experience for all guests and to assist our staff in managing the large crowds we see during the warmer months. Last week, Arapaho County Sheriff deputies were called to Cherry Creek Reservoir to respond to calls of shots fired in the early evening. Aurora officials say there is no connection between issues they've seen at Aurora Reservoir and unruliness at Cherry Creek State Park Reservoir. Deputies say someone fired shots into the air during a music event, which several hundred people were attending, sheriff officials said in a June 2nd social media post. The crowd quickly dispersed and fortunately no one was injured. Two unidentified men were arrested. State parks officials said visitors always increase on the weekends, and so too does more noise, more trash, and more drinking, said Colorado State Parks spokesperson Cara Van Hoos. We have seen an uptick in disturbances this year, starting in April at Cherry Creek, she said. In-home euthanasia offers pet owners alternative way to say goodbye. Veterinarians travel to clients' residence to provide fast-growing, personalized service. When Jacques Hennig's Australian Shepherd mix Alex collapsed at the park in January 2024, he knew it was time to say goodbye. It's a feeling in your gut. I knew immediately the cancer had come back, he said. He also knew how Alex would die, at home, with Henning and his partner Max Donald by his side. A year earlier, the couple had used in-home euthanasia for their other dog, Oliver. It's a horrible thing to have to deal with, Henning said. You don't want them to ever go. You want them to be with you forever. But it was important to me they were happy in death as well. I didn't want their last vision to be the vet with fluorescent lighting and lots of noise. Veterinarian H. Howells, who performed the service for both Alex and Oliver through her company, Peace Wings, is among a subset of veterinarians who offer in-home euthanasia. These mobile veterans come to the pet owner's residence, where they administer medication so the pet can pass in their home, surrounded by their owners and often other family pets. In-home euthanasia is a fast-growing service, With a network of veterinarians that includes local, independent doctors like Howell's, Conifer-based Amy Holtschlag, and Franktown-based Julie Hasenfratz of Hometown Veterinarian Hospice, as well as national companies like Lap of Love that employ a network of doctors. As in a clinic setting, veterinarians performing in-home euthanasia typically use two medications, one to sedate the pet and a second that stops the heart. Some vets also use oxygen to help the pets relax further. While fees vary, the service costs more than an in-clinic euthanasian service. The personalized nature of the service, time spent with each client, and transportation costs are all factors in setting prices, veterinarians said. The three veterinarians who spoke for this story charge between $350 and $775, their rates varying with the type and size of animal and the services included. Some charge separately for cremation, urns, memorial keepsakes, and other items and services, while others include it in a flat fee. The last act of love. Many pet owners say it's worth it, and the best way they found to close the final chapter in a beloved pet's life. When Commerce City residents John and Jan Liker adopted their Great Dane, Kiara, John Liker said she was an aggressive, poorly socialized, quote, out of control, end quote, rescue. They spent 2 years training and loving her, quote, to turn her into the wonderful Great Dane that she was. She had a wonderful life, end quote. Giving her a peaceful ending was their final act of caring, and Hasenfratz helped them give her that. Dr. Hasenfratz took her time and let us know everything she was doing, every step of the way, Liker said. She just sat down with Kiara, petting her, letting her sniff everything. She gave her the proper drug to just relax. You still cry when they go. It's never easy. But this is so much easier on the people and the animals. It's the last act of love you can do. I will always do it this way if possible. Hasenfratz also offered the couple a memorial paw print with Kiara's name imprinted on it, which the couple treasures. When it's time for our current Dane to go, Julie will be the one we'll call, his wife Jan agreed. Despite the pain of loss that accompanies an in-home euthanasia, owners describe the service as personal, intimate, and soothing, and most veterinarians say they work hard to make it that way. People have a lot of anxiety around this decision, Holtschlag said, and pets are often not relaxed when they come to the vet clinic. There's that innate panic they have coming through the doors. That fear is not there when they're home with their people. They want the experience to be as peaceful as it can be for both the pet and the people, and a memory the owners can cherish going forward, Hotschlag said. Hotschlag treats each appointment as its own service. I usually do a little information gathering before I get there, she said. I have the family tell me if they have any special requests or wishes, and who is going to be there. There are things we can do at home we're not able to do in a clinic to make it meaningful for them. They can set up the experience the way they want it to go. When I get there, I spend a lot of time going through what will happen, explaining the process so they know what they're going to see. They can hold their pet or be right next to them throughout. In December 2023, Holtschlag helped Evergreen residents John and Sue Dunlop say goodbye to their 10-year-old standard poodle, Reggie, who'd suffered a series of debilitating seizures. Dunlop described Holtschlag and her assistant as patient, respectful, and, quote, very compassionate, end quote. While it was heartbreaking, it was great that he was here in our house, in a place he was comfortable, John Dunlop said. It was easier on us, too, because we didn't have to walk out of the vet's office and leave our deceased pet behind. We've been down this road before, and this was so much more comforting. There's no easy way, but in our mind, It was the most compassionate thing we could do. After Reggie passed, John Dunlop brought his other standard poodle, Cooper, into the room to see the body, an act that would have been more challenging at a clinic. "We hoped it would give him some knowledge of what's going on," he said. "Who knows what they think, but for my peace of mind, I'd like to think he understood." The Dunlops opted to have Reggie cremated and planned to spread his ashes on their property. "I would do it again," John Dunlop said. "We've had pets euthanized in a vet's office, and they were also compassionate and doing the best they can, but it's not the same. It's not like being at home." Guidance for end-of-life decisions. Veterinarians who provide the service can also guide pet owners in making end-of-life decisions. When a pet has a slow-moving illness or a long decline, the owners have a choice in the matter, Howell said. "When they call me, a lot of them are struggling with the timing. If I wait too long, I've been selfish. If I do it too soon, I haven't been patient enough." The big question that's underlying that is, quote, "Am I killing my pet?" end quote. The answer is no. Cancer is killing your pet. Kidney disease is killing your pet. Their pets are dying anyway, Howells continued. When people can flip that switch, it gives them and me peace. They're no longer making a life and death decision. Biology has already made it. In all reality, at-home euthanasia is a happy ending. In many cases, they've lived a long life, and they've been in the home in which they've been cherished. Hasenfratz also provides such consultations and said she understands the struggle pet owners undergo. She tries to emphasize that death is not just inevitable, but natural. And while you can't keep it from happening, you can sometimes control the circumstances that surround it. "I lost my mom in hospice care, and that's when I started realizing how important it is to be home. Not just for the patient, but for the family," she said. "Saying goodbye is a natural part of living. If we can pass away as comfortably as possible, I think that's what we all would want. I feel very good about what I do because I end struggle," she continued. "I give the pet a peaceful passing, and I give that peace to their human family, too." Because the services are so personal, the bonds extend beyond owners and pets to the veterinarian as well. Henning and Donald chose Howells for Alex because she had previously done the same service for their dog, Oliver. The moment Howells and Oliver met is still vivid in Henning's memory. "Oliver used to come over at every meal and lean on you with his forehead. We found out years later that's a way they bond or say thank you," he said. When Dr. H came in for his appointment, she was sitting on the floor getting her supplies out. Oliver could hardly walk, but he went over to her and pressed his forehead into hers, and I thought, this is okay. Bonding Authority set to buy Fable Stanley Hotel. Governor Jared Polis has signed legislation that modifies a grant program for Colorado's creative industries to allow the Colorado Educational and Cultural Facilities Authority to buy the Stanley Hotel in Estes Park. Polis signed the legislation Tuesday at the Stanley Hotel, a lengthy amendment to House Bill 1295, which extends incentives offered under the Colorado Community Revitalization Grant Program, was approved by the Colorado House late April and the Colorado Senate earlier this month. Allows the Colorado Educational and Cultural Facilities Authority to create a nonprofit company to manage a facility and direct revenue from that facility toward the organization's mission to support schools and art facilities in the state. The legislation is a critical step in the authority's plan to buy the historic Stanley Hotel in Estes Park and issue bonds to support the construction of a new film center at the hotel. Once the bonds are repaid, the bonds could be for as much as $450 million. The authority will own the hotel and film center as a private revenue generator to support schools and cultural facilities. The authority was created in 1981 to lend money to educational and art organizations for new and renovated schools, venues, and museums, but the original legislation barred it from owning or operating those facilities. The new legislation changes the authority's mission to include ownership and management of facilities and expands the definition of the facilities supported by the authority to include a film center, a hotel, eating and drinking establishments, gift shops, and lodging. Owning the Stanley Hotel would be a new role for the bonding authority that has issued $7.6 billion in low-interest, tax-exempt bonds that help pay for schools, student housing, performance halls, museums, and Olympic training facilities across Colorado since the early 1980s. The 140-room Stanley Hotel, the inspiration behind Stephen King's The Shining, is owned by the Grand Heritage Hotel Group. The group CEO, John Cullen, bought the dilapidated historic hotel out of bankruptcy in 1996 and has invested millions in upgrades and maintenance. Originally, Cullen planned to sell the Stanley Hotel to Arizona-based nonprofit Community Finance Corp., which would use bonds backed by CECFA to develop the Stanley Film Center. When the deal with the Arizona group did not materialize, the Colorado Bonding Authority stepped in with a plan to acquire the hotel, which required legislation to adjust its mission and allow the purchase and management of a property. The legislation does not approve the deal, but only empowers CECFA to own and manage property, John Cullen said Tuesday. That doesn't mean that it's going to happen, it just means it's enabling it. So rather than having an Arizona group, we now have a Colorado group, Cullen said. And when I last checked, people in Colorado are more motivated by things in Colorado. Part of the original deal included the sale of Cullen's 89-unit Fall River Village Resort. A new deal has emerged with the Colorado Housing and Finance Authority, the Estes Park Housing Authority, and Grand Heritage Hotel Group that would convert the Fall River Village property from vacation rentals to workforce housing. The Fall River Village deal is not connected to CECFA's plan with Cullen for the Stanley Hotel. It's important to note that CHFA is not party to any agreements or arrangements pertaining to the sale of the Stanley Hotel, including whether the sale may be conditioned upon the sale of Fall River Village Resort, said Matt Lynn, a spokesman for the Colorado Housing and Finance Authority. The Colorado Economic Development Commission in 2015 designated the proposed Stanley Film Center a Regional Tourism Act project, qualifying for $46.4 million in state sales tax incentives over 30 years. The commission last month approved an amendment to the Stanley Film Center plan that included listing both CECFA and the authority subsidiary, Stanley Partnership for Art, Culture, and Education, LLC, as owners of the film center. Told he'd never walk again, Castle Rock man defies odds after stroke. By Haley Lena. Dan Leffert dedicated most of his life to traveling across the globe to places like Switzerland and Germany. He spent most of the time outside, riding his motorcycle for thousands of miles. So hearing the words, quote, you'll never walk again, end quote, felt like the end of the world. He lost his mobility after having a stroke in 2016, and now 70, he has undergone countless hours of physical and occupational therapy. With the inspiration from his grandkids and the help of a medical device, Dan is walking once again. And, like his motorcycle riding, he's measuring his miles. Dan has a goal of walking 200 miles by the end of the year, and in 2025, he'll up the mileage again. He says it's not about trying to get back to where he used to, but more about seeing where he can go from here. I've got to do 300 next year, Dan said. It's not more what I had, it's what I'm going to do. Everything changed on an ordinary February day in 2016. Dan was sitting next to his wife, Vicky, taking part in a homeowners association meeting in Castle Rock, speaking when his words began to slur. Their property manager asked if he was all right, and when Dan responded, quote, no, end quote, 911 was called. I was coherent, but not speaking well, said Dan. The initial CT scan verified Dan had suffered a hemorrhagic stroke, causing bleeding in the brain. Multiple times throughout the night, he was taken in for more scans to monitor the bleeding, which eventually stopped. Stroke is not only a leading cause of death for Americans. The Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention also states that it's the leading cause of serious long-term disability in the U.S. There are two main categories of strokes, according to the American Stroke Association: ischemic and hemorrhagic. An ischemic stroke, which accounts for 87% of strokes, occurs when a blood vessel or artery going into the brain is obstructed. A hemorrhagic stroke is when a blood vessel leaks or ruptures and bleeds into the brain, putting pressure on the brain in turn, causing damage. Dan was in the intensive care unit for 6 days before spending the next 5 weeks at Spalding Rehabilitation Center in Aurora. He didn't know how he could keep it up, but little did he know that one of his inspirations had been born just months earlier, Haley, his granddaughter, who he calls his angel. We brought Haley into the ICU, into rehab, every single day and laid her on his belly and said, quote, this is why you have to get better, end quote, Vicky said. The stroke left Dan in a wheelchair for a year and a half. He was paralyzed on the right side of the body, his dominant side. He continues to learn how to adapt every day, oftentimes with unique products his kids find. For some time he struggled with insurance for his occupational and physical therapy, but his speech therapy was located at Sky Ridge Medical Center. While at speech therapy one day, the couple noticed occupational and physical therapists. They realized they wanted to be with those therapists. Vicky walked up to the receptionist and asked how she could get her husband in. Dan soon began therapy to relearn movement and coordination skills for over 2 years at Sky Ridge. Typically with insurance, Dan said there were only 20 visits per year for occupational therapy and 20 visits for physical therapy, but he went 100 days a year paying out of pocket. He did multiple forms of therapy, including constraint therapy, aquatherapy, acupuncture, deep needle therapy, and massage therapy. I was looking for anything, said Dan. Everything I did contributed to getting better. Then, a friend from one of his motorcycle groups came to visit one day. He told Dan about a medical device called Bioness L300 Go, which the friend's father had used after having a stroke. After some research and learning their insurance wouldn't cover the device, the couple met with a Bioness representative. It came down to, we don't care what it costs, Vicky said. With one device on his thigh and two others on a knee and a hand, the devices promote recovery by activating neuromuscular pathways required for walking and movement. It's a functional electrical stimulation system that produces mobility improvements for patients who have instability or mobility issues. The device also has an app on the phone in which the patient can alter the intensity and an adaptive algorithm that can predict walking patterns and provide stimulation when needed to make it easier to move, according to Bioness. Needing more intense therapy, Dan began seeing a neuromuscular massage therapist in addition to using the devices. It was during this first year with his therapist in 2020, Dan was back on his feet. He walked a mile-long track. That distance has gradually gone up each year, reaching 120 miles in 2023. Although the recovery has been long and frustrating at times, said Vicky, it's also been rewarding, Their two youngest grandsons have learned how to walk alongside Dan, and the walking has become easier with the help of his new puppy, Grizzly Bear. Both Dan and Vicky want to encourage those who have had a stroke to not give up. "You can do it," said Vicky. "Try any and everything that's out there because it all brings something to the table." Arapaho County continues to sound budget cuts alarm. Arapaho County's annual State of the County address had two elements. On one hand, leaders celebrated the various services the county government provides to residents. On the other hand, leaders said some of these services are imperiled. The reason? A budget shortfall, worsened in part by the drying up American Rescue Plan Act funds that were issued amid the COVID-19 pandemic. Arapaho County is seeking residents' input on reducing or eliminating some services. Budgets across the country could be affected, including public works, the sheriff's office, public health, and affordable housing. Specifically, the potential cuts could include up to $12 million less for the sheriff's office, impacting crime prevention and response times, officials said. Public works could be cut by approximately $3.7 million, affecting road safety, quality, and congestion. Human services and public health departments could collectively see a $4.7 million reduction affecting health outcomes. The budget cuts could also lead to the elimination of the Aid to Agencies program that funds nonprofits that work to answer the demand for affordable housing, domestic violence support, mental health treatment, and shelter, among many other services. In 2021, the county received $27 million from ARPA to recover from the pandemic. The funds provided food and rental services for residents and supported local businesses, according to Commissioner Bill L. Holen of District 5. ARPA funds have also funded many of the county's new programs, such as the homeless response, but these funds are running out by the end of the year. The county said an alternative to dramatic cuts is to increase property or sales taxes. Commissioner Jessica Campbell of District 2 said the demand for services has been increasing and costing more than before. Commissioner Leslie Summey of District 4 spelled out what a bailout might look like. "This would mean asking voters to approve a ballot measure that allows us to raise the county's mill levy back to pre-Tabor levels," Summey said. Tabor, the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights Amendment, has been enacted since 1992 and caps the amount of revenue Colorado governments can retain and spend, according to Colorado's Department of Revenue. Tabor requires voter approval for certain tax increases, including property tax. Summey said a property tax increase could cost the average homeowner, a $500,000 home, about $13 more per month, and would provide the county with about $74 million more each year. Another option would be to increase the county sales tax, also requiring voters to approve a ballot measure to add a new 0.25% sales tax, costing the average household about $4.30 per month, providing the county with about $45 million more per year. The third option is to not raise neither the sales nor the property tax, cutting about $35 million in services. "This is an important thing for us to solve," Commissioner Jeff Baker of District 3 said. "Funding affects everything we do and our ability to do it. In March, we surveyed residents about these choices and we're surveying again this week. So far, there's been no silver bullet identified." The county has until the end of August to decide if it will move to add tax increase questions to the November ballot. Residents can visit acbudget.com to see how a potential tax increase will affect them and engage in community discussion. Residents can also expect survey emails in their inboxes this week. The budget crisis came amid the state address highlighting, quote, responsive government, end quote, and the county's efforts to address residents' concerns about feeling disconnected from the government. County governments are some of the most intimate forms of government because they give residents direct access to the governing process, said Commissioner Kerry Warren Gulley of District 1. Arapahoe County government, by design, is responsive to the needs of our community, the commissioner added. It leads to some very great outcomes. One of those outcomes was the establishment of the Arapahoe County Public Health Department at the beginning of the year. Warren Gulley said the department provided a harm reduction vehicle and managed meningitis and measles outbreaks. The county has also sustained its promise to maintain open spaces and local parks since 2003, when voters approved a ballot measure to increase sales and use taxes. Baker said in the past 20 years, the county has protected 32,000 acres of open spaces, built and approved 70 miles of trails, and in 2023, the county celebrated the reopening of Tisististis Hainononino Park, Cheyenne Arapaho Park, honoring the Plains Native American tribes. Our ability to provide these programs and services in jeopardy, Warren Gulley said, and it is the elephant in the room. After years of insufficient tax revenues combined with a continuing increase for demand in our services, Arapahoe County is facing a choice. 8 things to know before whitewater rafting this summer. Take a ride on some Rocky Mountain whitewater between hiking and camping this summer for a refreshing and fun-filled afternoon. But read this article first. Whitewater rafting is as notoriously Colorado as green chili, but it can be deadly if you're not careful. According to stats from the National Institute of Health in 2018, Colorado has led the nation in whitewater fatalities since 1975. Fortunately, local experts like the ones at Liquid Descent Rafting in Idaho Springs and Kremlin have been leading safe excursions on the water since 2007, and their safety tips can save lives and create lifelong memories for mountain enthusiasts. We've got it figured out in Colorado, Liquid Descent owner Alan Bredo said, especially on Clear Creek. It snows all winter and we ride Loveland Ski Area and Echo Mountain and enjoy the snow. It melts and we enjoy it as it runs down the hills on rafts and kayaks. Then it flows into Golden and we make a bunch of beer. Bredo said he's showing tourists and inexperienced rafters the ropes every day. So he helped us come up with 8 things to know before hitting the water this summer. Number 1. Rafting season tentatively runs from May through August. Generally, May 15th is the target date for rafting season to open up, but it all depends on forces bigger than us. It just kind of depends on when the creek gets high enough to run. Weather determines that, Bredo said. So, like this year, it's been a slow build because it's been colder than it usually is, which is great because the longer the river takes to peak, hit maximum flow, the longer the season is going to last. With the strong snowpack this past winter, the best since 2019, along with a cool spring, Bredo said it's shaping up to be a long and successful season. Not only is the season going to last longer, but the river is going to provide more excitement and more fun, he said. Bredo anticipates the season running through August, but it depends on the water and the weather. Number 2. You technically don't need to know how to swim, but it's encouraged. Depending on the adventure option you choose, it's not necessary to know how to swim, but it's always encouraged, especially when rafting through Clear Creek, which can be more dangerous than most rafting locations. At Liquid Descent, the ability to swim is not required on the Upper Colorado, Clear Creek Beginner, and Clear Creek Intermediate trips. Participants must know how to swim for the Clear Creek Advanced and Gore Canyon trips. We hope that people know how to swim when they do the beginner or intermediate trips, but we don't require it, Bredo said. Number 3. You must sign a waiver before going whitewater rafting. All whitewater rafting participants must sign a waiver. Parents or guardians must sign the individuals under the age of 18. Number 4. Colorado Parks and Wildlife requires 50 hours of on-river training for guides. Guides are required to be seasoned professionals before taking the public on rafting expeditions. Colorado Parks and Wildlife requires 50 full hours of on-river training before being allowed to take customers out on the water. But Brado requires more. If you ask me, that's nowhere near enough to guide on Clear Creek, he said. Because Clear Creek is a little bit steeper and there's some aggressive sections. So, even on the beginner's section, we require our guides to have over 100 hours of on-river training before they can even think about taking customers. Brado said the state requirement is pretty minimal because, in a lot of cases, raft guides won't be on as dangerous water as Clear Creek Whitewater. That's why he doubles the state requirement to ensure optimal training for guides and safety for customers. Number 5. Show up in street clothes with rafting clothes in hand. Obviously, you're going to get wet. Because of this, avoid cotton clothes, jeans, and other fabrics that absorb or hold a lot of moisture. The best clothing to wear is quick-drying synthetic fabrics that are comfortable under your wetsuit, which is required. Bathing suits are ideal choices. Like most rafting companies, Liquid Descent provides wetsuits, splash jackets, personal floating devices, and helmets. You can rent boots for $5, but you can also bring any footwear with an ankle strap that remains securely on your feet. No flip-flops, Crocs, etc. Number 6. No drugs or alcohol can be consumed before rafting. With steep rapids, jagged rocks in the water, and fast-paced rafting, this rule is self-explanatory. There is no tolerance policy for drugs and alcohol, including marijuana, before whitewater rafting. Number 7. Prepare for a workout. Depending on the level of difficulty or experience you choose for your rafting outing, prepare for a workout. Fighting the rapids with your paddle can be a strong exercise for biceps, shoulders, triceps, quads, and more. Intermediate and advanced trips will be quite the workout, so don't expect a leisurely trip if you choose a more difficult rafting option. Customers are welcome to bring water on the bus, so the raft site, but it's recommended not to bring personal devices on the boat. Number 8. Rafting is accessible to people of all ages and experience levels. Brado said a popular misconception about whitewater rafting is people might not think it's accessible to everyone, but the variety of the Colorado landscape provides options for all. What's awesome about Clear Creek is we have stretches for first-timers and young kids all the way up to adrenaline-seeking, adventurous people, Brado said. So Clear Creek is perfect for that, and we have everything in between. Whether you have small kids, age 5 and up, or someone who has a little bit of trepidation about rafting and you want to start out at a really mild stretch. We got that. Liquid Descent also has options for first-timers or experienced adrenaline junkies who want the, quote, real Colorado whitewater experience, end quote. Clear Creek is unlike other rivers because it's constantly moving with little to no flat water, making it a fun time for rafters of all ages and experience levels. I couldn't design a better river to offer to customers, Brado said. The trips are action-packed and fun and perfect for those looking to have some awesome whitewater experiences. For more information and FAQs, visit https://coloradorafting.com/. Alzheimer's Association offers methods to prevent, treat the disease, by Elizabeth Slang. In keeping with Alzheimer's Awareness Month, the Alzheimer's Association is offering various methods to reduce, diagnose, and live with the disease. The Association said 55 million people worldwide live with Alzheimer's disease, including over 7 million Americans and about 91,000 Coloradans. June is Alzheimer's and Brain Awareness Month, and the association reminds people that almost everyone will be touched by the disease, be it by having it themselves or caring for someone who does. So it's important to know methods of reducing the chance of acquiring the disease, knowing when you have it, and mapping out the journey of living with it. Reducing the risk. The association said Alzheimer's most likely occurs in people over the age of 65, but the changes in people's brains that led to the disease can start 15 to 20 years before science can diagnose it. Therefore, the association urges people to, quote, take charge, end quote, of their brain health, which can be done in various methods. Those methods including the following. Address hearing loss. Research shows 65% of adults over the age of 60 lose hearing. One study showed those with hearing loss and a higher risk for cognitive decline were able to reduce their decline by about half because they utilized hearing aids and hearing counseling. Guard your gut. Researchers found that bowel movements less frequent than every 3 days was associated with 73% higher odds of subjective cognitive decline and long-term health issues like inflammation, hormonal imbalances, and anxiety and depression, the association said. Maintain a healthy diet. Those whose caloric intake consists 20% of ultra-processed foods are likely to have a 28% faster decline in global cognitive scores compared to those who don't. These scores include, quote, memory, verbal fluency, and executive function, end quote. Sleep it off. The National Sleep Foundation reports that sleep apnea may affect 20% of the population, and 85% of the people don't know they have it. People with this sleep disorder are more likely to have brain biomarkers associated with a heightened risk of stroke and cognitive decline. Quote, people with this sleep disorder are more likely to have brain biomarkers associated with a heightened risk of stroke and cognitive decline. End quote. Be engaged. A University of California Davis study found that volunteering was associated with better baseline scores on tests of executive function and verbal episodic memory, the association said. Getting a diagnosis. If it's too late to reduce the risk of acquiring the disease and it seems one is showing signs of Alzheimer's, then a medical visit is the next course of action. Jim Herlihy, Senior Marketing and Communications Director of the Alzheimer's Association, said, quote, it is important to see one's family physician who, possibly, may provide a referral to a specialist if they aren't comfortable making a diagnosis, end quote. A diagnosis is critical because only half of the 91,000 Coloradans and 7 million Americans living with Alzheimer's are ever diagnosed. And without a diagnosis, the individual will be unable to take advantage of new FDA-approved medications, such as lecanemab or Leqembi, that have proven effective in slowing the progress of the disease in the earliest stages, Herlihy said. Living with Alzheimer's. Following a diagnosis, Herlihy said the next steps depend on the stage of the disease and what medications are available to help treat it. For the family, planning is essential to understand how to best care for their loved one and ensure that they are prepared for the changes that come with the progression of the diagnosis, he said. There are support groups both for the person and the diagnosis as well as for family members to offer guidance to better understand what to expect. The Alzheimer's Association offers various programs for people including a free 24/7 helpline staffed by trained professionals. The helpline number is 800-272-3900. There are many books on the subject of life after an Alzheimer's diagnosis, including one recently published by former University of Denver Chancellor Dr. Rebecca Chope, who discusses her own experience with receiving an Alzheimer's diagnosis, Herlihy said. Additionally, he said the association offers, quote, a broad spectrum of programs and services, all provided at no charge, end quote. Those resources can be found at www.alz.org. Thank you for joining us for the Arapaho County News. My name is Tim Elliott.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.